just because lenders kind of might, you know, what one lender might consider a good score, another one might not. I mean, we tend to say 600 or above. That's normally kind of the range where you're, you know, considered good or, you know, near prime. But it can really vary.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Strictly Money, where finance and your prosperity meet. I'm Sejal Patel. We need to talk about the debt crisis in Canada and the financial strain that it is putting on millions of Canadians. Equifax Canada releases a quarterly MarketPulse report, and the latest one shows that consumer debt hit $2.5 trillion. So not only are more and more people struggling to make their credit card payments, they're now starting to miss mortgage payments. I'm pleased to have Rebecca Oakes on the show today. Rebecca is the Vice President of Data and Analytics at Equifax Canada, and she's going to tell us what is going on with these figures, what's really behind them, and whether there's any relief in sight. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for coming on Strictly Money.
Thank you for having me.
So $2.5 trillion is a lot of debt. And, you know, I'm glad you're here, Rebecca, because in your capacity, in the work that you do, in the work that I do, people like us do get concerned about that kind of debt, because it means that a lot of people are feeling stress and anxiety, and it means that they're probably not saving for, say, a 25 and 30 year retirement. So thanks again for coming on. I want to talk about just some of the trends that you're seeing. And I know there's mortgage debt, and then there's non-mortgage debt, things like credit cards. And I noticed in the latest report that credit card debt balances hit an all-time high of $116 billion. Delinquency rates are also up. So maybe you can walk us through some of the trends that you're seeing.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And you're right, it is a huge number. You know, I guess one of the more positive sides to this is that some of that number is coming from population growth. So we know we have a lot of immigration here in Canada. And as individuals do enter the country, they need access to credit like all of us. So some of that credit card balance that's been rising year on year is just linked to natural growth in the population and more people using credit. The less good news, though, is that we are seeing average balances rising as well. So this is per individual who's using their credit card. How is that changing over time? And that number's going up, but it's been going up for some time. It did go up in the last quarter of last year. Now, some of that is normal holiday spend that we all put on our credit cards towards the back end of the year. But the kind of some of the concerning trend is that, you know, we are seeing payments starting to reduce on credit cards, and that's helping to increase balances. And there are some pockets of consumers where that balance is rising a little bit faster, and that's likely because they are finding they need to rely on credit more than they have done previously, and they're using a credit card that little bit more. So some of it is just natural growth. Some of it is a little bit more worrying.
Yeah, so let's dig into that. You mentioned that the balances are up, and it would make sense because I think, you know, these were the Q4 numbers. So I'm assuming, you know, you have the holiday season kind of hangover where people use the credit cards to fund some of those gifts. What about delinquencies, though? And maybe you can explain exactly what a delinquency is.
Yeah, sure. So a delinquency is really just a term that we use to talk about either the number of individuals or number of maybe accounts where a payment's been missed as a percentage of the total, or we look at it from a balance standpoint. So two different numbers we use. One is looking at volume, one's looking at balance. Similar sort of trends that you tend to get on either of those. And normally in our report, we look at what we call 90 plus delinquency. So this is where a payment's been missed for 90 days or more. So this is quite a severe stage of financial difficulty. Typically, once an individual reaches 90 days, they're, you know, much less likely to be able to recover from that situation. And so that's what a delinquency is. And what we're seeing on credit cards, on mortgages, on several products, actually, we're seeing those delinquency levels rising. Now, they are coming from a period of low. So during the pandemic, actually, individuals paid off a lot of their debt. We saw delinquency levels fall to an all-time low. So they have been rising since that point. But what's getting quite worrying now is that for some types of products, some types of credit usage, those delinquency levels are now back above where they were pre-pandemic. We're seeing things like mortgages, missed payments rising, which really is a concern because obviously, you know, as individuals, we protect our homes. So if we're seeing missed payments going up on the mortgage, that's a worry.
Yeah. And you know what is also interesting? The fact that you are seeing these kind of delinquencies. So correct me if I'm wrong, Rebecca, the minimum payment that you have to pay on a credit card isn't actually that high, is it? Is it something like 3% of the balance?
Yeah, it's typically about 3%.
Okay, so it might be a couple of $100. So the fact that they're missing even that would be a bit concerning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's really an early warning sign. The credit card tends to be the one product where individuals start missing payments first when they're in financial stress. So definitely worry there.
Yeah, because like you said, people will make their mortgage payments first. You know, they want to be able to have a roof over their head. So that tends to be a bigger priority over, say, credit card payments. Rebecca, I want to go back to the immigrant piece too, because we know that credit is important when they come here, you know, establishing the credit history. Are you seeing signs though that, and you may have this information or you may not, but are you seeing signs that immigrants, new immigrants, are relying heavily on credit cards to get by? Because we hear a lot of, you know, people coming here and they're struggling as well, which again is also concerning, because if they're trying to build credit card history or credit report history and they're having a tough time, that doesn't signal good news either.
Yeah, I mean, for new immigrants, you know, we tend to see in the first 24 months, somewhere around $10,000 of credit is used by immigrants, which actually is quite a lot for someone entering the country for the first time. You know, but again, you are trying to set yourself up in an entirely place. You know, you absolutely need a credit card here in Canada. It's very difficult to kind of do a lot of basic things without a credit card. I remember when I moved over from the UK, just things like parking, I had to have a credit card to kind of pay for parking. So, you know, definitely they absolutely need access and use access. But, you know, you are right in the sense of there are a lot of reports around immigrants really struggling when they arrive here because maybe the cost of living is much higher than they were expecting. And that has been rising. And I think we're all feeling that, including the immigrant population.
Have interest rates gone up on credit cards? And I have to admit, I don't pay attention to it because I tend to pay off the full balance every month. But they were high already, Rebecca. They were, you know, around 19-20%. I'm just wondering if that's exacerbated the problem.
Yeah, I think some lenders have started to rise some of those interest rates, but credit cards do tend to be quite high anyway, as you kind of mentioned, in terms of the kind of the interest rate on there. But yeah, I think they have been increasing a little bit with some of the interest rate movements.
Okay, so we talked about credit cards. Let's talk about auto loans as well. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, auto loans actually as an industry has struggled a little bit. During the pandemic, we saw a lot of supply chain issues. We saw prices for vehicles really shooting up, making it less affordable, I guess, for individuals and harder to kind of purchase a new vehicle. Now you combine that with interest rates, which are really high. If you need to finance the purchase of a new vehicle, that's really tough right now because those prices are still very high. Interest rates are high. So what we're seeing is the number of individuals taking out auto loans, that has fallen. It's starting to pick back up again a little bit as the price of used vehicles in particular is starting to drop slightly. But the affordability is still a real challenge. So we're seeing consumers really extend out those auto loans, kind of 7-year loans, 8-year loans. That's kind of typical now, which is means a lot more interest for individuals to pay back on their vehicle.
Are people relying more on line of credits as well?
Yeah, that's definitely something we did see a little bit of, particularly if you are a consumer that maybe has access to something like a home equity line of credit. We started to see a bit of movement in terms of reduction in auto loans and maybe a switch to a home equity line of credit, even some lines of credit, you know, unsecured, because those rates tend to be a little bit better. But again, it all depends what you have access to and kind of what those rates look like for individuals.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, Rebecca, and hear from our sponsors, BMO ETFs, but we'll be right back and we'll continue this conversation. Are you looking to enhance the level of cash flow from your investments? BMO ETFs has you covered with their Coverage Call ETFs. These ETFs generate cash flow from two sources, the dividend yield from the underlying securities and the premium generated from selling the call options. BMO Covered Call ETFs strike a balance between generating cash flow and participating in the growth of rising markets with their experienced portfolio management team and effective strategy with over 10 years of history. BMO ETFs is the largest covered call ETF provider in Canada, covering 13 covered call ETFs across a range of strategies across regions, countries, and sectors. Visit BMOETFs.com to learn more. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus of the BMO ETFs before investing. Welcome back to Strictly Money. I'm here with Rebecca Oakes of Equifax Canada. Rebecca, let's turn to mortgage debt. Obviously, mortgages are much bigger, so the size is bigger. You're noticing that people are starting to miss mortgage payments as well.
Yeah, absolutely, particularly in certain geographies as well. So we're seeing those missed payments go up everywhere, but certain regions are a little bit worse than others.
Yeah, Ontario and BC. Not surprising, given the price of homes.
No, absolutely. You know, when you look at those areas, those mortgage amounts tend to be significantly higher than the national average. And what we're starting to see is as those consumers are coming to the end of their current term on their mortgage, be that a variable or fixed, typically it's 5 years, and they're coming up for renewal, that's starting to increase payments and starting to have a knock on the ability for them to keep making payments on their mortgage. So that's likely why those regions in particular are a little bit worse, because those balances are higher and there's more of an impact from the interest rates.
Yeah. I want to get into that for a moment, but I remember the last time you came on, we were talking about the type of people who are missing this, and it typically was millennials. Are you still seeing that?
Yeah, very much so. Again, that kind of age range typically tends to be the most credit active. I think we talked about that last time. In Ontario, we are seeing younger consumers, kind of maybe a little bit younger than the millennials, kind of just reaching the millennial point. They're starting to see missed payments increasing as well. Again, mortgages tend to be a little bit higher, the younger you are, because the first time you are purchasing your home, you tend to have a higher mortgage amount. But it is across the board, but millennials are feeling that strain in particular.
Yeah. Well, I know everyone's kind of, holding their breath and just waiting for when we're going to see interest rate cuts. Hopefully, it looks like, I think economists are pretty unanimous that we are going to see it, probably not until July at least. So, but at the same time, as you mentioned, a lot of mortgages are up for renewal. The question I had, Rebecca, is when there is a renewal, do they look at credit scores again? Because this could be a real double whammy, couldn't it? If they're missing both, say, their mortgage payments and then relying on their credit cards to fund day-to-day living expenses.
Yeah, absolutely. And it all kind of depends what your preferred route is as well to getting your new mortgage. You know, obviously your existing lender likely will give you an offer. They may be looking at your credit score as they do that, or you might be going out and looking what else is available in the marketplace, because for a lot of individuals, it's going to increase their monthly payment amount and you want the best deal possible. At that point, your credit score definitely is a factor that lenders will look at in terms of, what rate you might get offered, or indeed, would you get approved? Obviously, mortgages are a bit more complicated anyway from an application standpoint. So lots to look at, but your credit score can impact those offers.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about credit scores, because, a lot of people I know ask me questions about credit scores and what to look at and particularly how to improve it. So what in your mind is a decent or a good credit score?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Just because lenders kind of might, what one lender might consider a good score, another one might not. I mean, we tend to say 600 or above. That's normally kind of the range where you're, considered good or, near prime, but it can really vary.
Okay. Then what if you don't have that score, say, what are things that people need to be aware of? The question is, how do they improve their score? What are things that they can do?
First of all, I would say, think about what a credit score is. So a credit score is really there to predict the likelihood that you are going to make payments back on any debt that you have. So the typical things that go into a credit score are things like your payment history, your payment behavior, how much credit you are using, maybe how long you've been using credit for, because if you've been using it for a long time, perhaps, you're a little more stable and can understand how to use credit more than if you're a first-time credit user. But because it really is predicting the likelihood to pay back, the payment behavior is the key to kind of increasing your scores and making your payments on time, not missing payments. Now, if you're in a situation where you have missed payments, that doesn't mean you need to panic and it's the end of the world. You can rebuild your credit score. And again, using credit, keeping your utilization low, which is a term we use for how much credit you're using compared to what's offered. So if you think about credit card balance compared to your limit, that's what utilization is. Keeping that low can really help. Not applying for lots and lots of credit products at one time, that can help as well, because that can hurt your credit score. So lots of different ways you can make small adjustments to helping your score.
Yeah. And when you talk about paying your bills on time, they look at things like utility bills as well, right?
So at the moment, a lot of credit scores don't actually use utilities.
Okay. I thought they did.
Yeah. Yeah. So it can depend. So there are certain types of, not all providers provide information to the credit bureau. So typically things like your mobile phone, that likely is reported and may be taken into account in the scores. Other types of utilities, like maybe your energy and your gas, sometimes it isn't. So it can vary quite a lot versus, say, a credit card, which more often than not will be in your credit score.
Yeah. The credit utilization one that you mentioned, Rebecca, this is also one that I think a lot of people are not aware of. And I talk about it quite a bit, right? So if you had, say, a 10,000 credit limit, you don't want to maximize that, right? I think a good credit utilization is somewhere between sort of 30 and 50%, if I'm correct.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that if you are someone who has really used up all your available credit, that is deemed high risk. That does have a greater likelihood of missing a payment. So absolutely, keep that utilization low and it will definitely help your credit score.
Yeah. And of course, you know, pay your bills on time, try to pay more than the minimum. Those are all good good ways to build your credit score. Are retail cards, applying for retail cards, more dangerous than just applying for, say, an ordinary Master card or Visa?
It depends what you mean by dangerous.
Yeah, well, you know, because a lot of people get tempted, Rebecca. You know, you go to the Bay and someone says, oh, is that going to be on your Bay card? And well, if you apply for a Bay card, you get, you know, 10 or 15% off your entire purchase. So people get tempted by it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you know, I always say there is no such thing as bad credit. It's all about how you use credit and how you are able to pay that credit usage back. So, you know, I definitely think, you know, it's important to understand how you are using credit, what debt you are incurring, and you know, being able to kind of look into whether or not you can keep making those payments. So I don't think there's any worse necessarily, better or worse than others, but it's really about being very mindful about how you use credit.
And also very important is to get your statement, your credit report. Would you say once a year, at least just review it?
Yeah, I mean, even maybe more often than that, to be honest. I mean, it is free to kind of access your credit report now. And the reason I say maybe more than once a year, maybe you want to do it, you know, once every 6 months or so, is just most importantly, making sure everything on there is accurate and correct. Partly because you want to make sure there's nothing that's going to be hurting your credit score on there, but also from a fraud standpoint. You know, in the current economic climate, unfortunately, we are seeing fraud levels starting to rise. And so checking your credit report can help you identify risks, like, has someone stolen my identity and have opened credit that I'm not aware of? So it can be good for multiple reasons.
Okay. Rebecca, really appreciate your insights. Now, before I let you go, I always ask my guests three rapid fire questions before we end the show. So are you ready to play?
Sure.
Okay. What, Rebecca, is the best financial advice you've ever received?
Probably paying to pension early. So from a young age, I was always told, get a pension, even if you're not able to put much in it. So that's what I did. Paying to pension.
That's a good one, right? Because I often try to educate people and saying, you know, it's not, you don't have to put a lot in to make a difference, but if you're consistent and you start early, you get to take advantage of the power of compounding. So that's a great one. Okay. So then what is the worst financial advice you've received?
I would say, you know, just putting it on your credit card. Not that that necessarily was financial advice, but I've had friends or family members when I've gone, oh, something's broken, can't afford it, just put it on your credit. Not always the best way of you know, managing something. Sometimes saving is a better option and then buying something than using credit. Not that credit's necessarily bad, but yeah, that's probably the one for me is resisting that temptation to just put it on credit.
Yeah. Yeah, because it can be very expensive, as you and I've discussed. Okay, so if you could enact one law that could help people manage their debt better, what would it be?
You know, what I would really like, and I'm not sure to what degree that happens in Canada already, I would really like much more teaching of budgeting, pensions, basic financial education in schools. I'd like to see a lot more. I know we've actually done some work before, volunteer work, where we've gone into schools and talked about credit scores and credit. And, you know, actually, I think, you know, starting from a young age and instilling that kind of understanding is so important to helping people make better financial decisions later on. So more education in schools would be good.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, you'd be surprised at how many kids actually think it's free money. Especially when it comes to credit cards. So the earlier we can get them educated and instill those good habits, the better.
I agree.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Rebecca. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that does it for this edition of Strictly Money. Don't forget to subscribe and comment, leave a review, and share it with your friends. I'll see you back here next week. Until then, stay well, stay wise, and stay wealthy.